It's time for Toronto's Top Line.
I need you in a Mexican luchador mask. No shirt, doing the salsa.
So you think the guy beside me, he's going to be like Swayze and I'm Farley?
Yeah, kind of.
This is Overdrive with Hayes, Noodles, and the O-Dog on TSN 1050.
It's been a while since we had a hockey game to look forward to, and it's been a while since Jamie Noodles McLennan was in studio, and look who has made his way into the TSN radio booth.
Reintroduce me, eh? That's
back
that's,
in here.
Man, it's a grind. Let's be honest. Like, I was rattled last week, sitting there having to...
I can't believe you have been gone this long, like...
Full week and 2 days.
You like prop bets?
Yes.
If that was my surgery,
twice
the number of days gone from the studio.
Well, Noodles, you
be
missed,
serious. Like, don't
you missed 7 shows, right?
Yes, because I missed Thursday, Friday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. So that's yeah.
Right. We weren't on last Monday, so yeah. 6 total shows you missed. But you had surgery twice.
I had two surgeries.
That's the difference.
The first one, I must have paid 2 for 1. Like, that's the thing. I would have been in
so
here.
So I have 2 surgeries. How many days missed total?
I think double digits.
I'm thinking 30.
Yeah.
I'm gone a month.
I think you're up for a while. A couple weeks anyway.
It's
Jamie, I'm gone a month.
But you know what you're like. You want to be gone a month in your mind, and then 3 days in, you're like, to hell with this. I want to do a phoner. I want to do something. Like, you're going stir crazy watching the world go on without you, and you want to be involved.
I would have been gone a month.
You've got to remember, though, you're talking about an injury. You can't golf. You can't move.
Yeah, that's, like, I haven't seen a movie in, like, that's what's bothering me, not being in here and not going to see a movie in studio. I've watched everything online. Like, I'm making my rounds through Netflix, through iTunes, everything. I'm in real good shape with that.
But you're saying you want to be in the theater is what you're saying.
I want to see the new Pirates of the Caribbean.
Right.
I was talking to somebody about that this morning.
Can you imagine if I pulled a Malakoff and said, back surgery, I'm screwed, and someone took a vid of me on the golf course?
See, that's what I picture. That's what I see happening.
Didn't he go skiing? Wasn't it Malakoff during, like, the break?
He was doing the downhill.
That cost him a lot, I think, didn't it? It was in Montreal.
It was him or Brisebois.
No,
both of them.
I think it was both of them. And then this is how greasy. Now this I'll blame this on the fake media. Do you remember he bought a watch, and somebody recorded it? Like, he bought some like $30,000 Rolex or Breitling or something in New York City, the Montreal Canadian. Somebody reported it, and customs was waiting for him when Montreal flew back. And he gave it to one of the guys on the team to wear through. Yeah, I don't know if you remember that whole story.
I do not remember that story at all.
It's crazy.
I only remember the skiing when he was supposed to be on the IR.
Yeah.
Or was missing practice and missing games.
And him and his wife, like, I played with Vladdy.
Guy shows up in the Swiss Alps and is just carving.
Unbelievable.
His wife was a supermodel, Ludmilla, I think her name was. She was the most miserable person I've ever seen in my life. She never spoke. I played with him, Malakoff. He was one of the best players I've ever played with from a talent standpoint and from a strength standpoint. We should ask, is Ray on the show? Ray's on the show.
Yeah, Ray's on, yeah.
Ask Ray about Vladdy Malakoff. That guy was 6'4", 240, ripped to shreds, could skate like the wind, could shoot the puck, had his give a you-know-what meter. Was either 0 or 100. There was nowhere in between.
Well, I mean, common sense at some point has to come pouring in, you would think.
Oh, yeah.
You're playing for the Canadians, and I think he was at, like, in, like, Tremblant or something.
Yeah,
like that.
Yeah.
Like, it wasn't like he flew out of the country or it was during a break or whatever. This guy is 45 minutes outside of the city where people are blatantly going to recognize you.
Yeah.
Like, well, I had a situation where the doctor looked at my shoulder. This is when Peter Laviolette was giving me all kinds of problems about my labrum tear, and he's like, why can't you play? The doctor looked at me and he said, you're done. Like, there was a month and a half left in the season. He goes, you're having surgery in a week. So he told me I was done, but I could still kind of move my shoulders and do different motions. And my buddies text me the next day and they said, do you want to tee it up? I said, yeah, I do. And I felt awful. Like, if this was Toronto and I went out and teed it up the day after I said I'm done for the year,
wow,
I could have been in some trouble.
Yeah, I don't think you could get away with that in Toronto.
I played golf for 7 days straight, and then I had surgery.
Right. And then, so how long were you on the shelf after that?
5 months.
Okay, so you didn't play golf, you didn't play hockey, nothing.
Nothing.
Yeah, you might as well, you can't hurt it anymore.
Well, that's the thing. At
that
point.
But people think, like, if you can't play hockey, what are you doing out there? I just thought, I don't even care.
It's the optics of it all, right? Like, that, this kind of stuff happens all the time where it's like when we talk about players going to the World Hockey Championships or a guy going to the bar right after his team gets knocked out.
You remember Taylor Hall, Ryan Nugent-Hopkins, and Eberle went to Vegas for one of the I think RNH's 21st birthday, and down the stretch, one of them had surgery and missed, and there was a snapshot of them at the bar in Vegas right at the end of the season, and people were going nuts, going, you should be rehabbing, you should be doing this and that.
Well, I think Robbie Fabry, he had surgery, and he was showing some pics that were like...
Well, look at Gronkowski every single year. Yeah, Gronk blows out his knee or his shoulder or has hernia surgery or whatever it is. And within 24 hours, he's at the bar in like a body cast.
That's the one thing. We had in the minors, I played with a guy who had knee surgery and missed some games but was out on the dance floor.
Well, what do you think Ryan Johansson is going to be doing over the next week and a half? Like, is he not allowed to roll down Broadway in Nashville and party?
He should, depending on what his treatment is. But if he's on blood thinners or anything like that, then you probably can't be boozing. But if he's...
What, like, his season's done, he's not bailing on his team.
I know. It's like, if you're injured, you can't do anything. I have a perfect story for the situation with the Stanley Cup Final. I took a shot off my foot, and I couldn't do anything. I couldn't skate, couldn't do anything. And Kevin Dineen broke his arm. And we were in Pittsburgh. And we're like, it was his birthday.
Yeah, you take him out.
I go, let's go out for your birthday. So there's this legendary place in Pittsburgh called Froggy's. It's a garbage place. It's junk. And we were sitting in there, and they made us these giant martinis. And I was like 19 years old. And we look outside, and in comes Jim Rutherford, Paul Maurice, all the coaching staff. I've never done this in my life, but I ran away. I ran to the back, and I hid, and I waited for an opportunity to get out the door. And he did, too. He was like, we can't do this. We cannot do this.
Right.
I'm in America. Like,
it's the optics, though, too. You can't get away with – think of a picture of that on – Twitter nowadays.
But it's not even a picture, though, in that situation, because who cares what Joe Blow on his couch thinks?
Right.
You're talking about your GM, your head coach.
Yeah.
Like, those are the guys that actually matter.
The people that control his destiny.
Exactly. And when you talk about Ryan Johansson and what he's going to do over the next week, who cares what the guy in small-town Tennessee is thinking? What you have to worry about if you're him is how will Poyle or Laviolette feel about this.
I was at a peeler joint with Bates Battaglia in Raleigh, and the bouncer came up to me and said, just to let you two know, your whole coaching staff is coming in here for a...
power play meeting?
No, a bachelor party. They have a booth set up, and I was like, are you being serious? He goes, yeah, they're on their way. 10 minutes. I go, well, can you seat us somewhere, like, upstairs so we don't have to leave? Like, that's how...
Why would you not pick up your stuff, drop 100
like,
on the table,
we had to go upstairs.
And out the door?
Yeah, 100
on
the table.
In a perch, and we watched the whole thing, and I was like, why didn't we just leave?
Just get out of here.
Because there's probably only one good strip joint where you used to hang out at.
Well,
that's probably what it was.
The Dollhouse.
Raleigh, North Carolina isn't necessarily Vegas.
It was,
I would think, for
people. Couldn't roll on to the next one at the next block. Yeah.
Anyway, good to have you back, buddy.
And
we got a lot
back.
Of things to get into today. We're going to touch on this Tiger story. We'll get to that in a moment. But again, game one tonight, Pens Preds. Media day yesterday on a Sunday kind of stings. I mean, there's nothing you can do about it unless you decide to start on a Tuesday so that you have it on a Monday. But a lot of things came out yesterday that just got flushed away. It's a long weekend in the States.
I
Who really
be honest,
cares about what was coming out
I think
out
the
yesterday?
NHL is missing the ball here. We're talking about this just off air. I'll bring it on air.
Both.
This whole schedule is an absolute joke. Like, strike while the iron is hot. You just finished a game seven. Nashville's been waiting. Like, let's get rolling here. Like, you're missing out on an opportunity. The NBA's not getting going for, what, 3 weeks from now? 3 weeks from Thursday? They've decided to take some time off.
It's amazing how long the NBA is waiting. But I do think there's strategy behind that. I think the NBA is taking a page out of the NFL's book and saying, we know it's going to be Cleveland Golden State.
Right.
We know everybody on earth is waiting to see that. Let's stall. Let's build up the anticipation.
It's like the Oscars. You can see it seven different Oscars.
Wait for it, right? Wait, like build it up. Like the Super Bowl takes 2 weeks. That's not necessary. They could play the next week. They don't. They take an extra week to build up the anticipation. And I think there's a TV component probably in all of that as well. ESPN, ABC, they own the rights to the NBA Finals, and they're probably thinking, let's try to stretch this out because in June there's not much going on until we hit the draft at the end of the month. So let's make sure that we stretch it out. I'm with you, though, with the NHL. Try to take as much advantage of the opening as you can because there's nothing else going on outside of baseball, and it's still too early in the season for any must-watch events in Major League Baseball.
By the time the NBA gets going, you could be in Game 3. Game 3 of a real good final.
Kickstart your final.
And get a lot of momentum going. I don't like it. I think I still believe the NHL season is way too long. You should never be playing hockey. The cup should be awarded on the last day of May. And you move on. And June, July, and August should be non-hockey months, other than the draft and free agency. Like I get it, 82 games, you got the World Cup, you got the Olympics, you got later training camps and stuff. You've got to find a way. Guys are ready to play early September. You do all your training in June, July, and August anyways.
The thing is, though, I think it's TV related.
It is. It's got nothing to do with it.
In September, you don't want to fight with the NFL, and you don't want to fight with college football because you are completely irrelevant in
the
United States.
Brian?
In the States.
Well, yeah, in the States. Yeah.
In September, like you think a hockey season starting in September, like you go down to Columbus, if the Buckeyes are just kicking off their season, they may as well not even be playing. No one will care, let alone
Florida
the Southern
State
states.
Versus Florida.
Oh, and the Panthers are playing. It's completely irrelevant.
But would that change? This is just a question. Would that change how much their attendance or.
I don't know, but my point is, I think what they look at is, much like the NBA, you're going up against the NBA, but if you stretch it into June, there's not much else going on. You can kind of have exclusivity over the big events.
Yeah.
I think that's what TV is thinking.
Talking about. I have no idea how TV people could say, let's just drag this out. Who cares? Wait.
It's programming. What else are they going to show?
I know, but that matchup, don't you want to just fire that up and say, here you go. Here's LeBron and Steph Curry.
I hear you, man. But people are still going to watch. Doesn't matter if it started tonight or on Thursday. They're going to do 20 million plus probably for every game in the NBA Finals.
In the NBA,
so they're just holding the carrot out there.
Yeah, they're saying, wait, you guys are going to be there anyway, so let's drag it out. Let's get it as close to the end of the month as we can because June is kind of a wasteland outside of these big events for other things going on.
I feel like there could have been a little bit better. I don't know if planning's the right word because everyone, they there's a lot of smart people that or way above my pay grade that put that stuff together when it comes to TV and all that. I'm just saying as a fan, from a momentum standpoint, everything, you're starting on a Monday, Wednesday, Saturday, Monday, Thursday, Sunday. Like it's just weird, for me, Sunday, Wednesday. Like it's just the way it's laid out.
I hear you, but at the same time, when it's done, we're going to be sitting there saying, wow, I wish we still had a hockey game to talk about.
Because it cuts right at halfway through June.
The one thing that did come out of yesterday was Phil talking about Subban. And I think when you listen to this, what Phil's really talking about is his own situation when he was in Toronto. But here's what he had to say yesterday.
I know PK throughout, through whatever. And, I know what he's going through and what he dealt with. And, obviously he wants to win it really bad because, he got, I'd say the shaft in Montreal a little bit. And that's how it goes, so you want to prove people wrong. Yeah, I know what he's feeling like.
Once again, that is Phil Kessel. Just for your information, when he came out and said, I'm tired of the way Dion's being treated, he was saying, I'm tired of the way Phil's being treated. I got the shaft in Toronto, and this is the way he just uses, that's what he's talking about. And if you think I'm crazy, just check yourself. This is what he's saying. I got the shaft in Toronto, and he used PK to describe that. Just like when he said, I'm tired of the way, like he just out of the blue said, I'm tired of the way Dion's being treated in Toronto.
That, yeah, what's...
No, you were talking about yourself.
But do you
and
think,
in this situation, he's talking about himself.
I think there's a lot of him. I think that's exactly what it is.
He's using PK as an avenue to describe his own situation. I got the shaft in Toronto. I wasn't really the problem. I won a Stanley Cup. I'm a point producer. I'm a great player. And I got the shaft. And I want to use PK to describe myself in this situation. And that's what he did. And he did it perfectly. And all the dumb media people, they sit there and they're like, oh, wow, what a brave guy to stick up for PK. Like, oh, my God.
Well, I think the situations are different,
Stanley
though.
Cups here.
I think he's going to end up with two. I think I got Pittsburgh in this series.
I do. I've been so wrong.
I know,
in this
but
playoff.
Like, I just don't understand how media people, they're so smart, or they claim they're so smart. How do they not pick up on that?
Well, I think there are people that are picking up on it, but I also think when you break down the situations, the similarities are. Montreal didn't think they could win with PK. Toronto didn't think they could win with Phil as
Correct.
Their number one guy.
Right.
Yeah. And the same
but
thing
outside of that, they're totally
the
different scenarios.
Same thing yesterday, Brian, with PK. He's like, he grabs the mic and he's like, I'm going to go interview this guy. I'm going to go interview that guy. And all the media people, they're like, wow, this guy is so amazing, so engaging. I can't believe anybody would ever trade this guy.
Well, it happened.
Well, but this is the disconnect, though. This is a perfect example. What happened yesterday with PK walking around playing reporter and in a way making Mike Fisher's media about him is this is the disconnect. People on the outside look at that and say, okay, he's engaging, he's different, he's got a personality. All three are very good qualities to have.
Yep.
People on the inside, and this is where you guys can speak to it, hockey players and the hockey culture, whether you love it or hate it, it's just a reality.
They say, you know what, he turned media day into himself.
Right.
Ryan Ellis is in the Stanley Cup final for the first time. What happens? PK Subban has to come by, and he's like...
Let him have his moment. And
Thank you very much.
Exactly why
and
I'm sure...
And there's the difference, where if I'm Ryan Ellis, he made a joke saying, get out of here, Subby. But in reality, he's probably thinking, is this guy serious? This is my moment in the Stanley Cup Finals media day, and he has to come and try to steal the show.
That's
where the players, they think differently than the media does.
It's unfortunate because, you know, Brian, you make a good point, and you're bang on from the player's perspective, because some guys, I don't think it's that Subban's a dislikable person. I just think that sometimes you're like, okay, it's enough. Like, you know what Nashville's trying to do? They're trying to win a Stanley Cup for the first time. And I don't think PK's taking away from that. But on yesterday, for example, Ryan Ellis, yeah, he wants to be involved in that process. And I think he's a big part of that. So if PK either takes some pressure off of him or not, it's up to Ellis to decide that. But in a canon moment, some guys, I think, in that room would be like, yeah, it's a bit much. But... I think that's
exactly what happened in Montreal. I think that's how what most people have concluded is that players in that room, without knowing exactly who it was, but you know they're prominent players,
right?
Had enough of them,
yeah,
and didn't like whatever he was doing. And this is the problem with the conversation, is that guys like me, other guys in the media, and every fan out there, how can we know? I don't know.
Right.
I wasn't in that room. None of us were in the room.
Right. No.
So I don't know what Price, Pacioretty, Galchenyuk, and others, Markov, actually feel about him. I have no idea.
Right.
But my guess would be, and I think it's a very calculated one, and one I put a lot of money down on, is that some of them decided we don't want him around. Now, Bergevin could have handled it differently and said, sorry, figure it out. But obviously he said no. All right, I'll listen to you. We're going to move on from him.
Yeah,
right.
You think Mark Bergevin didn't do his research and go to every player and say, what are your thoughts? Like, that's how these things transpire. It's you do your research. You do everything. You don't leave any stone unturned. It's like, what do you think? And he probably got some information saying, no thanks.
Here's the other thing I'll throw in on top of that.
But I just love the fact that he grabs the mic. It's so planned out. He's already got a battery pack on his... It's planned out.
Where the hell
the battery pack's already on, so it's like, okay. And then he's like, oh, what, is there a mic anywhere? And the guy from NHL Network goes, oh, there's one right here. Yeah. Oh, thanks. And it's just like, really?
Whatever. I mean, it's here's the other thing, too, that I was asked yesterday about Subban's play. He's playing a lot different in Nashville than he is in Montreal. And it's not because in Nashville, you know, you've got Yossi in that helps. But Subban's playing a more economical game. In Montreal, I felt his systematic play some nights hurt them because he overhandled the puck. And because of some of the things that he did, there wasn't really team conducive as far as advancing.
You know what, though, Jamie? Sometimes
I think Lavi's done a great job there, though.
That sometimes where you have to put it back on Marc Bergevin to say, that decor isn't even close where PK almost thought, these guys can't move the puck, and I got to do it myself.
Yeah, and that's...
This Nashville decor, they are efficient, man. They can skate, they can pass the puck, they can move the puck, they can do everything with it.
And
he doesn't have to feel like he has to be the guy to make a play.
Think about this. The Florida Panthers are waiting to talk to Phil Housley until after the finals are over. Think of Phil Housley, his effect on PK Subban as well. It's probably a Hall of Fame defenseman pulling him aside and saying, you have the ability to do this. So try it this way. And because I think he's become a better player in Nashville from an economical standpoint. And it's not the high calorie plays with the low output. It's more economical. Move the puck, get involved in the play. And I think that systematically Nashville has been a lot better for PK. I know the PR stuff and that, but I look at what you're right. It's the talent level in Montreal compared to the talent level in Nashville.
Not even close.
And it's not close that way. So he can just relax and play his game, whereas in Nashville, in Montreal, he's probably doing too much and then getting too long of a rope from Therrien and then hanging himself with it. Either way, it's worked out, and they're playing for a Stanley Cup starting
tonight.
They're
in a great spot.
But we're talking about Subban instead of the Nashville Predators.
Well, and I guess by extension, though, we are bringing the Preds into it, and right. I don't think they need that. I don't think they care about that. I'm sure Pittsburgh enjoys it, though, because outside of what Phil said, and the only reason we are connected to that is because of Kessel's connection to Toronto, and obviously that kind of set off some flares here. Okay, what's he saying about his connection to the way PK feels and what PK went through? Outside of that, Pittsburgh just kind of rolled through yesterday. Nothing came out of it. Let's get hopping tonight. Let's get going tonight. Because they've been there before. Yeah. I mean, their story is one that we've detailed for years now. We're well aware of what is at stake and what is on the line. And it all starts tonight. So we'll keep teeing up game one. We'll head down to Pittsburgh. Ray's going to join us around 5:20 this afternoon. So we'll get Ray's take on media day at the Cup Final yesterday, teeing up game one. There's some Maple Leaf news in terms of a game that they're going to play next year. We'll tell you about that. And we'll hammer the Tiger Woods story to kick off the 5 p.m. hour.
And I have to tell you a story about a feed I saw this weekend from my good friend. I couldn't believe it.
All right, we'll get details on that. I've got some more gardening details that
nice.
I can bring to the table.
Hashtag mulch guy.
Hashtag do you even mulch, bro?
I also, you guys have to circle back on.
Do you even mulch, bro, is my favorite thing ever.
And I also want to hear you guys circle back on wee guy, no guy or something.
Wee-gee.
No.
Because I want to hear the fallout on it.
All right.
You got this thing, Marky? Let's hear it.
Wee-gee. Non-gee.
There might be some litigation in that. I think we're being sued.
No, Taddy.
He's allowed it for...
He's on board.
Maybe during the Cup Final. We have about 2 weeks to use wee-gee, non-gee.
And we're going to come back with some salsa music because I have an update.
All right, we need details on that. And Dirk Hayhurst will join us. The Jays took 2 of 3 over the weekend, back in action tonight. Joey Votto is in town. Does anyone even know? Does it create any buzz? Guys from Toronto, arguably the greatest Canadian ball player of all time. He rarely rolls through town as a National League player.
Better than Walker?
I think he's creeping real close if he's not there already. And yet he just has the personality of a dead moth. I mean, no one pays attention to it. No, nothing. Like, and he doesn't care. He's not trying to sell himself.
You would think like SportsCenter every night would be like, here's a Canadian. You remember when Barry Bonds was, they would always go, Barry Bonds is up to bat.
Right.
Yeah.
Never with
nothing.
This
it just, there's nothing that comes out of it. He's a great player, but he's in town, and I'm not sure it's creating any buzz.
We gotta find out comparables to what he is as far as, like, I think Joe Sakic was a lot like him.
Sakic, yes. I think Andrew Wiggins has some of that.
Yeah.
And Wiggins is in a similar spot. Like, he goes first overall, and there's all this buzz about him, but because his personality, he's so soft-spoken, it's like, all right, I guess we'll just keep watching you play, but
maybe
there's
McDavid's
nothing else.
Like that.
I think McDavid is exactly like that. Votto, McDavid, and Wiggins. You put the three of them in a room, just all fall asleep within 15 minutes. So Dirk will join us and help us tee up the Red Series as well. Overdrive continues, TSN 1050 and on the TSN Go app.
So it didn't go so well.
You go to this place.
Huh?
Two left feet?
No. It's just you really got to, like, get your hips into it. And 20 minutes, there's an hour lesson at this place before you actually start salsa dancing. And my hips started seizing. And then the lady that's doing the lesson, she just went from, like, so simple moves to full out, like,
Antonio,
La Bamba. And I'm like,
Antonio
no,
Banderas.
You lost me.
So are you going to go back or
no,
what?
No, I'm getting private lessons.
Why don't you just give up?
No. No.
Do you really feel, though, like you can improve to the point where it's worth your time?
I do. I told you about snowboarding and you didn't believe it.
No, I believe that you could. You're
I'm not
going
to tell you that I'm going into, like, championship salsa dancing, but I'll be good.
But that's what I'm saying, though. Like, with the hips, you don't need to worry about that with snowboarding. You're strapped in. You're not really moving. I knew you could improve at that. I knew you had balance. You're an athlete. But this is different. If you've got the locked-in hips, man, you're not going to work those things out.
My hips are active.
You've got active hips?
Yes. Thrusting.
I don't know.
Is a specialty move.
Well, Steph emailing us asking if we should all do private lessons together. Steph wants in.
Like Steph Appolito?
She's got two left feet. I don't
this
think
could
she's
be
got rhythm.
Kind of like our new couching to 10K. Couching to salsa dancing.
I'm in.
No way.
I'm not doing this.
Come on, Noodles. Get out of Edmonton and come salsa dancing.
No.
Private lessons, we all go. Malls, you in?
No, Malls
no,
is
God.
From Keswick.
Yeah.
Where he's from, Oshawa. No way.
Yeah, Mullen's never doing it. I don't see Noodles doing it. I don't have any interest.
If there's anyone that teaches private salsa dancing, all of us are doing it with our significant others.
Steph thinks she can do it. I don't know. I think she has
she
a
She used
bit
to go to
it.
Puerto Rico and
drink. That's it. That's what she would do.
Yeah, I love that. We talked about that on Friday. Like, it's such a Canadian thing to do.
Right.
You know, you go and do something once in an exotic country, and all of a sudden, that's your thing. And
that's
you're
her thing.
Totally born to do it. And it's like, no, you're not.
Yeah, like, you guzzle six Coronas on the beach. You're all of a sudden from the islands.
Right. You're from Mississauga. Don't forget that.
Like, Dominican and Mexico, like... You go and you take your life in your own hands when it comes to the food sometimes because of the water and the diarrhea and everything that comes with
it. We got to get into this report.
Think about
it. A buffet at a peeler joint down there turned ugly.
Really?
We're going to get into that.
Yeah.
All right. We got a lot of things to get into. You know we're not going to actually end up doing it all, but Ray's going to join us from the Cup Final at around 5:20. We've got John Scott on the show today because the PK Subban E60 profile debuted yesterday, and John Scott came out of nowhere with some disparaging comments. He really took a run at PK, so I guess we'll get him to explain where he was going with that and why E60 approached him of all people.
Yeah.
Like, I'm really curious. How did John Scott get on the radar? Like, we got to ask this guy about what he thinks about PK Subban.
Yes, random.
So we'll get him on around 6:30. We'll catch up with Dirk, touch on the Jays in 2 minutes. So Joey Votto is in town, a rare appearance. And we were talking about him before the break at how not a big personality, not very outgoing. I don't think he has any interest in anybody knowing who he is, what his backstory is, and he's entitled to that. We were also talking about PK earlier and someone texting in saying, guys, you can't complain about a lack of personality in one breath, then insinuate an athlete's persona is a detriment in another. Can't have it both ways.
We never said that.
Exactly. You can have a personality without it getting to a point where it's obnoxious or gets in the way or causes friction within a clubhouse, a locker room, a dressing room, etc.
Yeah.
Everyone embraces personality. Everyone wants personality.
For sure.
But with Votto in town, this is a rarity. You know, Cincinnati, they roll through town very rarely. This is the best Canadian ball player going, and I think he's on the verge of being touted as the best Canadian ball player of all time. He's from Toronto, and no one pays attention.
I didn't even know he was from Toronto.
Exactly.
I honestly did not know he was from Toronto.
All right, let's bring in Dirk Hayhurst, and this Baseball Insider is brought to you by Oakland Ford Lincoln, your premier source for auto service and sales in the GTA. What's your take on Votto and how you would define him? Not as a player. Everyone knows he's a great player, but is he a personality at all to the point where you could suggest he's a superstar?
Oh, my goodness. Well, look, I'm not sure how you quantify a personality to then say, oh, this guy's got a superstar's personality, because most of the time I would take a superstar personality and I would write that out of the contract and just take superstar production, because the function of personality is a function of narrative, right? We write that in on everybody. But I got to tell you, when you talk about Joey Votto, look, for the last 10 years, this guy has had an OPS above 900 or 1,000. That means there's only been 2 years in the last 10 of his career where he's produced below 900 on his OPS. He consistently walks over 100 times in the season. His batting average has only twice been below 300. And it's under 300 right now, but he's on pace to blow that out of the water. I mean, look, this is one of baseball's best active hitters, period. He could play for any team and be phenomenal. He's not being sheltered by a lineup, because Cincinnati's lineup ain't that strong. He's always been good. He will probably always be good, because he has all the tools that make a hitter incredibly productive. He's selective at the plate. He has arguably the best hitter's eye in the modern era. Think about that. This guy, the way he approached at bats and how balls and strikes were called on him changed the way that umpires approached batting. I mean, it was literally called the Votto benchmark on balls and strikes. If he said that was a ball, if he called out the umpire had to be like, oh, crap, I need to go back and watch the video. He's probably right. That's how good he was. And to put that in perspective against a personality that we can all talk about, you know, Jose Bautista and the quote-unquote superstar personality. You know, that is a personality that got made on a big stage when he was hitting a lot of home runs. And this is why this is a great parallel, guys, is because Jose Bautista was a guy that during his premium years, not a lot of people were talking about him outside of his local market. It was a smaller market. Cincinnati is a smaller market. Toronto's a smaller market. I know Toronto faithful fans say, no, it's not. Look at the amount of people that live here. But in Canada, baseball was a small market product. It really was, compared to hockey. And who was bitter about that? Jose Bautista. He was getting accused of steroids. Who was bitter about that? Jose Bautista. Just calling out fans, calling out media. You know, this is calling out baseball in general. How dare you? You know, and he could have just let that go. He didn't have to make a big stink out of it. There are times that Joey Votto was getting called out for stuff too. Didn't make a big deal out of it. Look, if you want to talk about a superstar, to me, that is quantified like this. Does his job exceedingly well. So well, in fact, he's in conversation to be one of the greatest in some category or another. And at the end of the day, if you sat down and talked with him, you'd have no idea, because he carries himself so well. And I think that when you talk about Joey Votto being as good as he is, there's been plenty of opportunities for this guy to make an ass of himself, and he hasn't done it. He's just continued to be good, and that he's in a small market on a team that doesn't win a lot means he doesn't get a lot of love, but he ain't bitter about it.
Do you think at any point in his career he wears a Blue Jays cap during a game?
Wouldn't that be awesome? I think every year when the Blue Jays are good, or they've got some, fans always want to trade garbage for awesome players. How many times have we tried to, like, put a package deal together with, like, 12 guys that all hit below 200? We'll give them all to you for one Joey Votto, like it's ever going to happen, right? It's not how baseball works. But there have been a lot of situations where the Reds have been struggling, and we just hope in Toronto that they forget how good Joey Votto is and how much of an anchor fixture he is to that program, and how he'll probably be good for several years to come, in fact, and that the Blue Jays could somehow steal him. And I think, you know, it is as big as the He's a Canadian player. He's a Toronto native guy. He might be one of the best baseball players ever came out of Canada, certainly on space or on track to enter that space. Still, at the end of the day, Toronto would still like to have somebody that was awesome that would help them win. And I think that as much as fans are patriotic about having somebody who comes from their country coming back and being great for their program, they would take anybody that helped their lone baseball team be incredible in the present. I would love to see Joey Votto come back to Toronto. I would love it because the media would have a field day with the symbolism behind it. But at the end of the day, if you find me someone that can help the Blue Jays, if the fan base sees that happening, they'll be just as thrilled about it as they were about acquiring a guy like Votto.
Well, there were rumors a couple of years ago that maybe the Reds would look to trade him and that the Jays were showing interest. This was back when Anthopoulos was here, and he was connected to every single rumor in baseball. And at the time, also rumors, you'd hear a guy who heard from a guy that Votto would never want to come here because it wouldn't suit his personality. He wouldn't want to be thrust into having to be the man and having to represent the city and the country. And I think that's where some people, myself included, as a Canadian, I wish, as unfair as this may sound, that Votto embraced it a little bit more, embraced being from Toronto, being Canadian. He didn't play at the WBC this past year, and he gave a pretty bogus reason for it. It's almost like hockey is obviously on a different level in terms of its history in this country and the superstars that come with it. But in basketball, there was Steve Nash. In golf, there was Mike Weir. And it's like we want Votto to represent that, to be that guy who talks, about his upbringing here and how great it was and constantly doing interviews with TSN and Sportsnet and all that kind of stuff. And it's just it's not in his DNA. It's not who he is. He doesn't have any interest in doing it, which, again, is totally his call. But I think from a Canadian baseball fan's perspective, it's almost like we're missing out on this larger-than-life personality that could represent this game that probably doesn't get enough publicity to begin with because he simply doesn't want to do it.
Well, I always caution that. I mean, these are like, I'm not saying that the way you're thinking about this is incorrect.
Well, it's greedy. I admit it's greedy and selfish. Who am I to demand anything out of Joey Votto? He doesn't owe me anything.
I think it's a bit greedy when we say, like, hey, you're good and you're from here. You should encapsulate everything that I think you should right now based on my zero interactions with you throughout the development of your career, other than the fact that we were born in the same, like, giant landmass. Because of those facts alone, I am upset with you, sir, not being more vocal about how awesome this landmass is. Damn it. I think whenever you do that, you're setting yourself up as the person who would say, well, I'll go ahead and take your unspoken or unmaterialized thoughts upon my shoulders to be the avatar of those beliefs. I say every time you do that, you set yourself up for the disaster. And really, what's going to happen to Joey Votto is, and we call it the Derek Jeter effect, right? Derek was a guy who was a career, a legendary career, but honestly wasn't the best shortstop of all time. But when people talk about the best shortstop of all time, who's the guy that they talk about? Well, it's got to be Derek Jeter, right? Because of the stage and the consistency, and also because he never said anything wrong. Almost always just said the basic requirement with a positive, look on his face, and then that was it. I mean, so I think about Joey Votto. Like, Joey Votto will be pointed to as one of the best ambassadors for Canadian baseball that ever was, purely because he hasn't done anything egregiously stupid, kept up shut, and was awesome. And by doing those things, at some point he will say, I'm thankful for where I came from, of Canada. End of story, people will make that into a massive issue, as we often do, sports media. So I think you're going to get everything you want. I think that if he was flashy and pushy about it, it could backfire on him. And I think that, if you try and focus on what you can't control off the field, that stuff has a tendency of knocking off the rails with stuff you can control on field. And since you're probably going to end up with your cake and eating it too if you just focus on what you can control on field, I'm okay with him doing that.
Always great catching up with you. We'll do it again next Monday. Thank you, Dirk.
Thank you, guys. Take care.
Dirk A. Hurst, our Baseball Insider, brought to you by Oakland Ford Lincoln. Quick Lane, conveniently located at 570 Trafalgar Road in Oakville.
I could have got the question, and you gave me the no guy. Non-gi.
He was close, though. He was close to being flushed.
Yeah, well, that was what I was worried about. I didn't want to circle back on another one, and his phone goes
I know,
wonky.
But every time you have to have a question, it's like, well, I've got to fit this in here, you know.
That's not true. I had other
Heisman
ones to ask.
And
I had a, what were you going to ask him that was
no,
so important?
No, I'll tell you after the break.
Well, tell me.
No.
You lost your train of thought.
I'll bet you don't remember anyway.
Oh, I forgot what I wanted to ask.
You're stalling as if you don't remember. Look at this face. You have no idea. You have no idea what you're going to ask.
Non-gi.
All right, Ray's coming up, and we'll touch on the Tiger story to kick off the 5 p.m. hour. Overdrive continues on the TSN Go app. All right, Ray's coming up live from Pittsburgh. I had a game on tonight. We will get into the Tiger Woods story as well that broke early this morning. And Donald Trump driving a golf cart. If you missed that story, it's my favorite story of the weekend. We'll tell you about it. Hour two up next. Overdrive continues. TSN 1050.